Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I got to admit, it feels kind of weird to be back in this chair. It feels a little odd. I know I was only gone for a week, but I haven't done a show in 9 days. And here's the kicker. My vacation was completely disconnected. I was disconnected. I went to one of the remotest parts of the East Coast that I could find, and I hid. It was awesome. I was only on social media, maybe a total. In a full week, I was on social media 10 minutes tops. I tweeted a few pictures from my vacation spot just because people were asking, wondering where I was going, but I didn't read anything on Facebook or Twitter. I didn't have Wi-Fi, for heaven's sakes. So not only was I completely removed from social media, I didn't listen to the radio at all. I barely watched TV, though I did keep up with basketball and hockey games, but I did more watching movies than anything. I read two books. I laid on the beach. I went horseback riding. I communed with the animals. Oh, do I have some stories to tell you? Some good stories about vacation. And I guess I can finally tell you where it was that I went to. Although I think we'll play a little game. I will drop you hints and you can see if you figure out where I went on vacation last week. Thank you so much for all of your kind words. I had a chance to look over most of them on Sunday. I returned home to my place in northern New Jersey at, middle of the night, middle of the night Saturday. So I guess I started back on my work schedule by driving into the wee hours of the night. And here we are trying to launch into this routine again. It's going to be weird because I slept for 8 consecutive nights. And so this is going to be a shock to my system. But at least there's a lot to talk about in sports. We don't have either one of our regular producers tonight. Neither Tom nor Isaac is here, but Ben and Brian are behind the double pane glass. And I had sent Ben a text on Sunday. And I said, Ben, I have a list. I feel like I know what I've missed. What else have I missed? Tell me what I've missed. And Ben sends me back this colossal text. It would be like both sides of a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. This is what it was in texting language. So there was a lot that happened, obviously, last week. That was the whole point. And so I would love to hear from you. What did I miss? What do you think I missed that I can't possibly live any longer without you telling me about it? And can we just settle one debate really quickly? It was Laurel, not Yanny. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. And again, thanks for your tweets. A-Law Radio on Twitter. We, of course, have our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. I promise over the course of the show that I will tweet a few more pictures as I tell you some stories. I see that our poor, lonely little Facebook page had zero traffic while I was gone. So without me, the Facebook page nearly folded, so it needs me, and it needs you. So you can find us on Facebook as well, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and our phone number remains the same even when I'm not here. I just don't understand why CBS Sports Radio doesn't shut down when I'm not here. But it's the same, 855-212-4227. I'm pleased that I remember. We are inside the Quicken Loans studios, national mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Vacation tales can wait. Why don't we talk about a little West Coast action? I've been doing network radio now for 12, 13 years. And I think the years all run together. But I often hear the accusation that national radio hosts and network radio carry an East Coast bias, which, if you listen to me, is completely ridiculous. I actually pride myself on the fact that I get to go on the air right after games finish up on the West Coast. And sometimes I feel like I've actually a lot in the last few years. Some of the best stories in sports have developed and have played out west of the Mississippi. Not to mention, I used to live west of the Mississippi, and I got my start in sports radio in Oklahoma and Texas, and so it wasn't on the East Coast. Anyway, when you look at some of the big stories in sports tonight, I feel like it's appropriate to dub it a West Coast bias as opposed to anything that you might tell me about an East Coast bias. The Warriors certainly help with that. Their run over the last several years has been phenomenal. It's been so much fun. For me personally, it's reminded me why I fell in love with basketball in the first place. Though there have been times this season when the Warriors haven't played that style of basketball that has made them so successful. We saw it at the start of the playoffs, even when they didn't have Steph Curry, right? They were able to run through that first series, not a sweep, but they were able to get through that first series relatively easily. Second series, finally Steph Curry comes back. Maybe a little bit rusty, mostly needed to get his sea legs under him, but you started to see the Warriors, the power and the might and the style of basketball, the edge that has made them so good. And that's how they started out the series against the Houston Rockets. But then in game two, there wasn't any intensity. And instead of the offense that they employ where they're firing the ball around and finding the best shot instead of settling for the first shot, instead of using the defensive intensity that has been so good for them in this postseason, and I credit Draymond Green for a lot of that. I've said that on the air a ton. What Draymond gives to that team is the emotional intensity, but he also is sold out on the defensive end of the floor. And very often, he ends up guarding a guy who's a lot bigger than him, like an Anthony Davis, right? Because when the Warriors use this, whatever nickname you want to use, the Hamptons Five lineup, the Death lineup, but that sounds so morbid, the small lineup is appropriate. When they go with their smaller lineup, Draymond ends up guarding guys who are at the five spot. And he brings them that intensity, that edge, that nastiness that they need. Whether or not he annoys you is not really the point. It's about annoying and disrupting the opponent on the court. And we didn't see any of that in game number two. We saw stagnant offense. We saw a defense that was a step slow behind the Houston Rockets. Now give credit to Houston. Houston came out on the court in game number two recognizing that they were in a situation which they had to win. We could debate all of the tenets of must win and when it applies, but that was a must win for the Houston Rockets. They couldn't afford to go down 0-2 on their own court. And so they didn't. Give them credit. They fought back, unlike the, say, Toronto Raptors when they had the opportunity to do the same. But going home to Oracle, you had to know there were going to be these bursts from the Warriors. This is what they do at home. That crowd doesn't wait for good things to happen. The crowd at Oracle makes the good things happen with the way that they lift their players, the way they carry them along on a wave of emotion. And so you saw that to start the game, and Houston kind of stabilized a little bit, had some shooting woes themselves. So it's kind of funny. No, I mean funny, haha. But kind of, I think, interesting that the shooting woes we're hearing most about are Steph Curry's, not, say, Chris Paul's, not, say, James Harden, because there have been long stretches in the postseason where he's put up a lot of points, but he hasn't shot very well. We're talking about the pending MVP. But you knew it was going to be a matter of time, right? At least I hope you knew that. I hope you were buying into, this is what happens. I take a week of vacation. The sports world falls apart without me. I hope you were not buying into this idea that Steph Curry had forgotten how to shoot, or Steph Curry sucks, or Steph Curry is injured. No, this is what shooters do. Sometimes the shots don't drop. But going home was exactly what he needed, with that big crowd behind him and the friendly rims and the fact that he's comfortable and he's in his routine. Not to mention the guy puts up a lot of shots. So eventually you put up a lot of shots and the shots are going to drop.
Curry, his choice of screens, uses Klay Thompson, gets Harden guarding him. Harden trying to reach in. Curry step back, quick release. Three ball, Curry! Curry waiting. Off a screen, deep three straight on, got another one!
Boy, when he gets on a roll, he's unconscious.
107-78.
Don't overthink it, really. I put in so much work and been blessed with this talent to shoot the ball for years. You got to rely on that and not try to get in your feelings or feel like, you know, the world's crashing down on you because you're not making shots. Like, wake up, eat breakfast, lift weights, go out, have practice, get your shots up, and just have confidence in yourself that you can figure it out.
That's what shooters do. That's why they're able to put up the number of shots that they do and have zero conscience about it. Because that's the job. I'll use a radio analogy. Sometimes I do shows that suck. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I can't get the words out. Sometimes I forget things. I remember things wrong. I say something dumb. I mean, that kind of happens every show. But sometimes it happens more often. I'm tired. I'm not in a groove. Things don't come out right. Mouth and brain aren't on the same page. It happens. Everybody has bad days at work. Don't forget, this is what Steph Curry does for a living. So I really hope you weren't one of those people that bought into, oh no, Steph sucks. Oh no, Steph forgot how to shoot the three. No, he didn't. He just was out of rhythm. And that's okay, because you know what? He missed nearly 12 weeks of basketball. But also, that's part of the deal. When whatever it is that you do for a living, when you play basketball for a living, sometimes the shots just aren't going to drop. What matters is what else you bring to the table, right? What matters is the other things that you can do that you can control, which is your defense, which is your energy, which is distributing and facilitating and rebounding and making sure that you're involved on both ends of the court. So no, Steph Curry didn't forget how to shoot. And no, Steph Curry didn't forget how to play basketball. But it is kind of nice when both your first name and your last name are trending on Twitter. So as I went to tweet tonight, as we're starting the show and kind of give you the, hey, warning flag, heads up, we're about to start talking, both Steph and Curry were trending on Twitter. I wonder if Amy and Lawrence have ever turned. No, that's never happened. Anyway, so good for Steph, but mostly good for the Warriors. I'll tell you why it wasn't just Steph Curry. In fact, Steph Curry may not have been the biggest factor in their Game 3 win over the Houston Rockets, which, by the way, was historical. You know how much I love the nerd alerts. There's actually several ways in which this game was historical. Number one, it was their 16th consecutive home playoff win, which is an NBA record. They had tied the Chicago Bulls, who had 15 in a row from a previous era. And now they own that record all by themselves. So there's one piece of history. Also, did you know, 41-point margin. It was a 40. This is ridiculous. I miss buzzer beaters. It was a 41-point margin. It's the largest margin in a playoff win in Golden State Warriors franchise history. And, nerd alert, it's the worst playoff defeat for the Houston Rockets franchise ever in their storied history. Their worst ever postseason loss. Also, just as a side note before we get to a break, here are the margins of victory in the 6 conference final games so far. 25-13. 30, 13, 22, and 41. What is happening right now? I mean, I get it. The series are 2-1, but can we not have a game that goes down to the wire? Can we not have a game in which the fourth quarter matters? Maybe? 41? Are you kidding me? This is supposed to be the top two teams in the NBA. I need a game that matters in the fourth. I need a game that goes down to the wire. That's what I did not miss on vacation, was talking about games that were blowouts. No thanks. All right, so 855-212-4227, that's the number. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then also our Facebook page needs a little traffic. It's a little lonely over there, but I will be posting some pictures, not while I'm talking, obviously, but during breaks at the top of the hour. So every top of the hour, I'll post some pictures from vacation. Thanks again for missing me. It's always nice to be missed, even if you were lying. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That was not a mistake by Tim Roy on the Warriors Radio Network. It was, in fact, a 41-point margin of victory for the Golden State Warriors, their best in franchise history in a postseason game. Also happened to be the worst playoff defeat the Rockets have ever suffered. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. It wasn't just about Steph Curry, though. It certainly was dazzling to see his 35 points, including those 18 in the third quarter. Did you happen to notice? Maybe it's only people like me who take notes like this, but in the third quarter, there was a 10-0 run and there was a 14-0 run in the same quarter. Wowzers. When they get like this, the Warriors, it's like an avalanche that threatens to sweep you off the side of a mountain before you know what happened. So, a 10-0 run and a 14-0 run in the third quarter alone. The crowd definitely got into it. But you know what jumped out to me is the defense. And I get it. They scored 126 points. Steph was great. Kevin Durant does what he does. But they also forced 19 Houston turnovers. You know what Golden State does with turnovers. They had 11 steals, 19 turnovers by their opponent, 7 block shots, and Chris Paul and James Harden shot a combined 12 of 32. There had to be something going on with the basket in the second quarter. And actually, to start the third quarter, Warriors were shooting at that same hoop. It really did feel like they had more missed layups than they had made shots for a stretch there in the second quarter. Something else that jumped out to me, and you can credit the Golden State defense for this as well, but also I think it was more of reverting back to what Houston has done all year. There was so much more ISO in this game. First game, opener of the series, ISO ball. Lots of it. Lots of dribbling. Way too much dribbling and holding the ball by Chris Paul and James Harden. They got away from that in game number two, and the ball movement was dazzling. That's why they kept catching the Golden State defense off guard. They were dictating as opposed to reacting. And then back to the ISO ball for a lot of game number three. Though you wonder, in that second quarter when they missed so many layups, how things might have been different had they hit a few of those. It's just that the Warriors have been a third quarter team for a good portion of this year. They come out of the locker room like a house on fire. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Steve Kerr, of course, raved about Steph, and we'll hear a little bit more. We'll talk a lot about Steph on this show. But he also pinpointed what the team did when they didn't have the ball.
Tonight was just all about defense and taking care of the ball. That's it. When we defend like that and we take care of it, then we're not giving anything easy and we're making them earn every point. That's what this is all about. If we can defend at that level and protect the ball, we're generally going to be in good shape.
Only 8 turnovers for the Warriors. And considering their style of basketball, that's huge for them. That's always their Achilles heel. When they do lose, when they are susceptible, it's because they are careless with the basketball. They get a little bit too cute, a little bit too fancy, and they don't just play solid, fundamental, find the guy with, you know, who's open. So it was a good win for the Warriors. But I did really appreciate what Trevor Ariza had to say after the game because there have been such humongous momentum swings that has a lot to do with these final margins of victory. Again, we've seen blowouts pretty much every game of the conference finals, and you almost forget that we're still talking about two series that are just 2-1.
A loss is a loss, whether it's by 2 or 200. You know, it doesn't matter. It's only 2-1 right now. We have another game to prepare for. And that's all we can do at this point.
A loss is a loss, whether it's by 2 or by 200. Except speaking for me personally, I won't speak for anybody else, I really would like to see a game or a loss that was only by 2. That would be awesome. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Did you hear what Mike D'Antoni had to say about how his team played in this game? He was fired up a couple of times. There were a few times where he called timeouts and was stomping around on the sideline, gesturing wildly. And no, he wasn't gesturing at the referees. He was actually ticked off at his own team for the way that they played.
Played soft, actually. I mean, you can't do that with these guys. These guys are good. And we still might not have won. Even with four, you got to play well. We didn't make shots early. We turned it over. I mean, just it was not a very good game. We're going to have to play a lot better on Tuesday.
We weren't as aggressive as we needed to be. We started off the game pretty solid, and then we let them gain some confidence to end the first quarter. But just defensively, they didn't feel us, Pauls, and it showed tonight.
So what you hear from Mike D'Antoni is we played soft, and what you hear from James Harden is we lacked their aggressiveness. And so it really is just as much mental at this stage in the season with a long series as it is physical. There are no secrets here. There isn't going to be some big surprise that the Warriors or the Rockets wheel out on the court. There's not a secret weapon anywhere. Not at this point in the season. Not when there's been so much tape and so much national TV. I mean, we all know what these teams are capable of, what these teams do and what they don't do, how they win and how they lose royally. So there's no secrets. It's just a matter of executing. It's a matter of going out there with the right frame of mind and forcing the issue on your opponent. And we've seen it now twice for the Warriors and once for the Rockets, twice for the Celtics and once for the Cavaliers. But I still kind of miss buzzer beaters. All right, so we're going to take some of your phone calls. Plus, we're going to spend a little bit of time in the Bay Area and talk about the Warriors, their perspective following the game. I did think it was fun that David Aldridge on TNT asked Steph Curry following the win if he was amused by all the conversation about how he couldn't shoot and how he'd lost his touch. That was David's question, and David and I are friends, so I can bring it up. Are you amused by the conversation surrounding the series and how you're the prey on defense and then you can't shoot the ball anymore? Yeah, ebbs and flows, baby. It's late in the season. There are only four teams still standing, and there are no secrets. All right. We're just getting started. I've barely even mentioned anything besides Warriors and Rockets, but we got a lot of other things to get to. West Coast bias when it comes to hockey, too. Big, big moment for a franchise that's really right now just stringing them together. Plus, running in the fog is kind of fun, but also difficult to watch on TV. Little bit of baseball that we'll mix in. And I'm starting to get some of your tweets about, what did you call it, Ben? Johnny Canada? Is that his new nickname?
Yeah, I coined that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to use it?
Probably not, but if he does, I might have to start trademarking it so I can get it.
I don't think he's good for the money. I wouldn't be counting on any of that yet. Okay, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page. It looks kind of lonely and sad, so I will post some pictures during the break, a couple of vacation pics, so you can see what it is that I was up to. I promise at some point to reveal my mysterious location. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
It wasn't just about Steph Curry, though it's kind of fun when both your first name and your last name are trending on Twitter. Yes, he had a breakout third quarter, 18 points, 35 overall. But it was the defense that I heard many analysts and coaches talking about after the game, both the winning and the losing coaches. A 41-point blowout for the Warriors as they head back to Oracle. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Tim Roy, the voice of the Warriors. And now we're excited to spend some time in the Bay Area with Warriors beat reporter Connor Letourneau, covers the team for the San Francisco Chronicle. What did you hear from the team, Connor, about the biggest differences for the Warriors between games 2 and 3?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference was just a motivation factor, to be honest. I mean, this is a team that's shown all season that they kind of need some sort of threat to be locked in, to be the team that they're capable of being. And I think after kind of taking care of business in the sense that they were able to do what their goal was when they went to Houston and win a game in game one, entering game two, the motivation just wasn't really there. And you saw them kind of take the foot off the proverbial gas and get blown out in Houston. And then Heading back to Oakland with the series tied 1-1 in front of their home crowd, they had a lot to play for. And from that opening tip tonight, they were really locked in defensively. It took a while for them to really get into a rhythm offensively, but their defense was able to hold them over. The Rockets just really didn't have much of an answer for that switch-heavy scheme that Kerr employs.
Mm. When you talk about motivation, we've certainly heard that from Coach Kerr this year. He's poked, he's prodded, he's called them pathetic publicly, you know, he's cajoled, he's done everything. And then when they got to the postseason originally, you could see that intensity level really amp up. But why at this point would they need more motivation? We're talking about one of four teams still standing.
No, I know. I mean, that's why their game two performance was really disappointing and kind of concerning, you know. But the reality is this team is so hyper aware of the fact that when they play the way they need to play, they can really beat anyone. And I think that breeds a certain level of complacency even when the stakes are this high. And I think you saw tonight that there's a reason why they believe that and why they have that problem, because when they're doing what they need to do, especially defensively, they're pretty impossible. I mean, to beat Houston, a team that won 65 games this season, by 41 points in a really pivotal game in the conference finals, that's unheard of. And they made it look easy tonight.
What's your reaction to, and I'll even include the Eastern Conference Finals here when we talk about margins of victory. So far in the six games that we've seen in the Final Four, the margins of victory have been 25-13-30, 13-22, and 41, Connor.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of that, to be honest with you. Because I especially think the Eastern Conference Finals is a pretty competitive series. So I don't know why the margins of victory have been so extreme. I know I've heard some NBA fans complaining, but the reality is there's a lot of great storylines. There's a lot of good things to talk about in both these series. I still think mm-hmm. it's pretty fun to watch. I mean, even though the Warriors won by 41, that you still got to see Steph be Steph again for the first time in what's felt like months. You know, he was not only hitting threes, but he was doing those Steph things that we're used to seeing. You know, he was breaking guys down off the dribble, getting the reverse layup, scoop shots, the 30-footers, and then shimmying afterwards, you know, that all that kind of stuff. So it was entertaining regardless of the final score.
I would agree with that. Connell Letourneau covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle, was there at Oracle. What was it like inside the arena for this game?
It was pretty hyped. Obviously, this is a game that I think the fan base has been waiting for probably at least 7 months, you know, since that season opener at Oracle where the Rockets stole one in the last moments of that game. It's felt like these two teams were on a collision course to face each other in the conference finals. And, you know, for the first time in the Steve Kerr era, the fan base had to wait for the series to come to them, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the first time since Kerr took over that the Warriors have opened a playoff series on the road. So I think the crowd lived up to, you know, everything that's built up to this moment. And I think they were really excited to see Steph go off in that third quarter, because I think everyone was wondering entering this game, is something wrong with him? Is he healthy? Because he just did not look right in game two.
How much do you think that had to do with him missing nearly 12 weeks of basketball?
Oh, I mean, I think that was a lot of it. I think he might have had a pretty minor tweak in game one. I mean, if you remember, he left the court at one point in game one and had to stretch in the tunnel, was asked about it post-game and kind of dismissed it, but also vaguely affirmed that there was something that happened physically. And he did look, you know, a step slow throughout that game too. So I think part of it might have been physical, but I think a lot of it is people underestimate the fact that, you know, this is a guy who his entire game subsists on being in a rhythm and being in tune with the flow of the offense and all that. And you're not going to get that back your first week or maybe even your second week. It's going to take a while. So it was a process.
Mm. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio and Connor Letourneau, who covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, the way that we got into this series, I thought was pretty interesting. If you remember, of course, this was played over and over again, the Draymond Green bite about how we're not going to say we're all hyped up about the Rockets. We've won two of the last three titles. We don't care who we play. You know, kind of like we're the Kings. We're on top of the mountain, and they're going to have to come after us, not the other way around. And yet it hasn't been that way for the Houston Rockets. They'd made no bones about the fact that they wanted the Golden State Warriors. How much have you seen that, kind of that attitude, that approach? Is it a part of these first three games at all?
I think a little bit. I mean, I think it was more of a storyline entering the series. Now that we're here, you know, obviously they both are aware of what the stakes are. And the Warriors, but the thing about the Warriors is when they lose a game, it's very rarely about, oh, you know, we got beat. It's we beat ourselves because, like I said earlier, the Warriors are hyper aware that when they're doing what they need to do, they are the most talented team in the league. They can beat anyone. And even though the Rockets played great in game two, and I think they executed their game plan to a T, the Warriors just lacked that oomph that really defines the way they play. And so I think they were more kicking themselves after that game for not playing with the necessary focus and enthusiasm more than anything really the Rockets did.
So in your opinion, that's the only thing that can bring them down, or that's what they think. That's the only thing that can bring us down is when we don't bring the focus, the aggressiveness, the intensity on defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is, you know, if the Warriors play their B game against the Rockets A-minus game, the Warriors can still win that game. And so I think it's just a matter of if the Warriors are doing what they need to do. Because if they're playing their A game versus the Rockets A game, they're going to win that game, I think, 9 out of 10 times.
Mm. You know what's something I think that I've really enjoyed seeing, and you're starting to hear more people talk about him, is Kevin Looney. How much fun is he having playing a really significant role right now in the postseason?
Oh, I think he's loving it. I mean, this is a guy who was basically out of the rotation 2 months ago,
mm-hmm.
Didn't have his fourth-year option picked up on Halloween. So he's been playing all season, knowing that he's going to be a free agent come this summer when the Warriors could have picked up his option, and he'd definitely be on the books for next season. It was only a $2.1 million option, so it wasn't a huge option, and he's kind of making them look silly now because he's emerged as a really important cog, you know, a small ball center that can switch off ball screens and pick up guards. He's been one of their best defenders in this series, picking up guys like Harden and Paul, and he was great defensively again tonight. And so you got to think that his worth is going to be beyond what the Warriors are necessarily able to afford this summer. And the weird thing about this whole dynamic for him is the better he plays, the less likely he is to be on this team next season. But, you know, you got to feel good for him because, you know, he's emerged when a lot of people were kind of writing him off.
It is interesting to see what Coach Kerr is doing with the bench, or maybe not doing with the bench, other than Looney, who's kind of played himself into that rotation, and certainly Sean Livingston, and he's been a part of all of what they've done over the past several years. Really, it's a limited bench run. Right now, the starters, when they use that smaller lineup, are absorbing the yeoman's bulk of the minutes.
Yeah, which is, you know, obviously Kerr's a guy who likes to play deep into his bench, especially in the regular season. When he gets to the playoffs, he usually tries to tighten it to around 8 or 9 guys. But, yeah, you've seen it even shorter than that at times this postseason, and specifically this series. And I think that's because there just aren't a lot of guys who match up well with this Rockets team because they are so guard-heavy and they rely so much on their perimeter shooting. And you guys like JaVale McGee, Zaza Pachulia, even David West just aren't really – going to be super helpful in a series like this. So Steve is forced to lean on Kevon pretty heavily, Draymond obviously, and then he even has been playing Jordan Bell a little bit, and that's a guy who really wasn't playing most of these playoffs and toward the end of the regular season. just because that's another small ball center type. And David West, who I think was their best bench player all season, mm-hmm. and that includes Andre Iguodala, isn't really playing at all anymore just because he's not a good matchup.
It's been interesting to see, certainly when you have the pieces that Coach Kerr does, how he mixes and matches. But as you talk about, yeah, he's definitely tightened things up with Iguodala now being in the starting lineup. All right, you want to follow Connor on Twitter at @Con_Cron, which is awesome. Love it. Big into the alliteration, so that one is A+. He's a Warriors Warriors beat reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle at @Con_Cron. Connor, thanks for a couple of minutes after a long evening, first covering the game and then writing about it. I appreciate it.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.
Concron. It could be a video game. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We appreciate Connor. I'd love to hear your reaction to what you've seen so far. I did just see, I will term it a disgruntled tweet from a Northeast Ohio tweeter. I'll just leave that out there for you. Now that the Warriors have Kevin Durant, there's no beating them. Well, that's actually not the case. They were pretty beatable at stretches this year and just got beat by 22 in game number 2. So we have seen them lose for sure. But I agree with a lot of what Connor has to say about the confidence of the Warriors. And I'm saying this is their approach. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with it. But the confidence that comes with winning 2 of the last 3 NBA championships, with being in 3 consecutive NBA finals and 4 consecutive Western Conference finals, is that you do think you're the crux and the catalyst for the series. If you play your game, no one else can beat you. And we have seen that. There are chinks in this armor, to be sure, but still a team that's got a lot of amazing pieces and options. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. We'll talk some hockey plus vacation tales next here on After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.